to order. Today's agenda will be strictly on Minshew update. There's a lot going on in this area, and I think it's early enough in the session that to hear from the folks at Minshew, and there's a number of bills that introduced already to refine the legislation that's on the books, and we'll be talking about those things later, but today's strictly for an overview of what's been going on. But I know Mr. Letts, CEO of Minshew, and Brian Buettner, did you both want to come up at the same time, did I hear? Buettner is the chair of the Minshew board, and of course, Scott Letts is a CEO of Minshew. So with that, welcome to the Commerce Committee, and you may proceed as you wish. And before the witnesses testify, always identify who you are and who you're with. So welcome to the Commerce Committee, gentlemen.
Thank you, Senator Metzen. I'm Brian Buettner. I'm chair of the Board of Directors of Minshew, and I want to thank you and the committee members for having us here today and for your attention to Minshew. Minshew doesn't lack for people with opinions, and I see probably half a dozen other people waiting in the wings to provide their commentary, so I will make my remarks brief. I'll let Scott talk about the operational aspects of Minshew, but from a long-term policy perspective as chair of the board, let me report on the first year and a half of this startup. Minshew was created without a roadmap of what a state-based public exchange should be. This has never been done before. When the legislation was passed, I bet if you ask 10 legislators what was created, you might get 11 answers. No rap on anybody in this room or any of your colleagues. It's just the reality of creating something new through legislation. So the board took authority about 6 weeks before an immovable federal launch date of October 1, 2013. In just 16 months since then, we have provided nearly 500,000 people with affordable, comprehensive health care coverage, delivered over $30 million of federal financial assistance to individuals across the state, and facilitated millions of dollars more in savings due to the lowest premium rates in the country. The uninsurance rate in this state is the lowest ever recorded, down 40% in just 1 year. All of this with a less than ideal system, but with tremendous assistance from our partners. Other agencies like DHS and Commerce, in the counties, in the health plans, navigators, just to name a few. We are constantly working to improve and to look forward to what Minshew can do to improve the health care of all Minnesotans. With that, I'll turn it over to Scott for more details about what they're up to.
Mr. Letts, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Scott Letts, and I'm the CEO at Minshew. Thank you for the opportunity to give you an update on things operation-wise at Minshew. As you know, Minshew was established by the 2013 legislature to be Minnesota's state-based health insurance exchange. It serves as a marketplace for consumers to shop, compare, and select health plans, and is the only vehicle for them to receive financial assistance in purchasing their coverage. It was launched in October of 2013, and the first open enrollment period covered October through March of 2014. During that first open enrollment period, we successfully enrolled nearly 400,000 Minnesotans in affordable, comprehensive health coverage. And as Mr. Buettner mentioned, data from the University of Minnesota show that the number of uninsured Minnesotans fell by over 40%. That is, it was nearly cut in half over that six-month period of the open enrollment last year. However, last year's fall launch wasn't without its challenges, which have been well documented. I joined Minshew in December of last year, about halfway through the open enrollment period, and I've really focused my time on three primary things: increasing the transparency of our operations, improving organizational accountability, and enhancing and improving the experience consumers have when they shop and interact with Minshew. Of particular focus was improving the relationships with various stakeholder groups with which Minshew interacts. We rely heavily on partners in many aspects of the work that we do. Health plans are very key partners, and we immediately instituted daily calls with them upon my arriving, which are now less frequent, but still at least weekly, to ensure that we have smooth and continuous communications. We've undertaken substantial efforts to dramatically improve Minshew's relationships with brokers and agents and other assisters. They're critical to our ongoing success, and I've made that a priority to ensure that they are heard and that they are listened to. I also made it a priority to vastly improve the customer experience. We focused heavily on improving the IT system over the course of the last year, improved the website experience for consumers, and put in place a very clear IT build governance process to ensure we had sufficient testing time to the improvements to the system as we headed into this fall's open enrollment period. We've invested in sufficient resources in our call center to ensure that consumers had their questions answered quickly and accurately. I'm pleased to report that these efforts have paid off in a much smoother open enrollment period this year with considerably fewer consumer challenges. While the system is still not perfect, it is vastly improved. I can report that even at our most busy times, call center wait times have been less than 5 minutes, and average call wait times have remained below 30 seconds for the past several weeks. We will have extended contact center hours all this week and up until midnight on February 14th and February 15th as we move towards the end of the open enrollment period. And we've dedicated digital customer service staff, people who are dedicated to answering emails and questions that come in via social media such as Facebook and Twitter. We're now in the final 2 weeks of open enrollment for this year. This year's open enrollment period for persons enrolling in qualified health plans runs from November 15th to February 15th. And persons obviously enrolling in Minnesota Care and Medicaid can enroll year-round. Our most recent data shows that we have enrolled more than 117,000 Minnesotans into coverage during this open enrollment period since November 15th. And just a couple things to close, Mr. Chair. I want to emphasize that Minnesotans who are still looking for coverage have time to do so, but they have to act quickly. Open enrollment does end February 15th, after which time, if they're purchasing private health insurance coverage, they won't be able to do so unless they have a qualifying life event. Those who don't enroll by the deadline could face tax penalties of up to $325 per person, but fortunately, there is free in-person help available through our brokers and agents around the state and navigators who can help people enroll and give them assistance. Financial help is available, but only if people come through MinSure. And just yesterday, we announced that Minnesotans saved more than $30 million on insurance premiums in 2014 through advanced premium tax credits. Those are real savings for real consumers. The average amount that people received was about $200 per person, which comes to an average savings of around $2,400 per year per person if people come through MinSure and able to qualify for those advanced premium tax credits. We know there's still work to be done, however, and so moving ahead, we focused very heavily initially on improving the consumer experience. It was the right place to start. We wanted to ensure that consumers had a vastly improved experience over last year. However, there are issues that need to be dealt with that really are about the back end of the system. We've worked very closely with our partners at the health plans, our partners with the counties, and they've been very, very collaborative and cooperative with us up to this point. But there's work to be done there, and we recognize that. And so the next phase of our build-out in the coming year will really focus on improving those back-end pieces to ensure that counties have the ability to work much more closely with the cases that they deal with, that health plans are able to get information and data from us in a much smoother way than they are now, so that we can continue, as Chair Buettner said, this startup as we're heading into the third full year of operations. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Weitz and Mr. Buettner. We're going to take some questions at this point from our, while they're sitting there. Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Lights. A couple of questions. As I understand that the broker's portal has not been working very successfully, is that something that has been corrected now, or is that still an issue? And could you give me some idea what the impact of that was as far as signups and stuff with that portal not working properly?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dames, the broker portal has not been functional to this point. It's one of the things when I mentioned sort of the next phase of build-out, that is something that will be added for fall open enrollment this coming year. We've made it a priority to do so. I think you make a very good point that one of the challenges of not having that operating has been that brokers have been challenged in terms of their ability to work directly in the system to get people enrolled. We recognize that has been a limitation in working with brokers. They're a frontline source of enrollment and a frontline source that people rely on to get into enrollment. And so that will be part of the build out for the fall open enrollment, but has not been there to this point.
Yeah, this Senator Dames, you're absolutely right. This is the committee that put on the brokers and the agents on the bill, as you recall. So
right.
That's very important part of the bill coming out of this Commerce Committee.
And then that's
why. Do you have a follow-up?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Leitz, is Minsure providing links on its website for certified agents?
Mr. Chair and Senator Dames, we do provide a directory on the site for certified agents so people can search by zip code and see who available in their area is able to assist them in enrollment.
Thank you.
Senator Jetson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So when you go out onto the website and what Senator Dames was talking about, it used to list them out by broker and navigator and those that type of thing, and now it's just listed as a sister. Is that correct? I mean, is that a decision that was made for some reason?
Mr. Chair, Senator Jensen, I would have to go back and see the specifics of the question. You may very well be right that that's how it's listed. I think it was a way to try to ensure that we were giving the broad range of who the assisters were within the, within that geographic area.
Senator Jensen.
Thank you. So what's happening in my district is when people go in to try to find somebody and it comes up as an assister, they're considering brokers and navigators and everything as the same thing. So there's some confusion when it comes to a broker that's listed not being able to help with public programs. So I'm wondering in this long-term plan, where is that particular issue going to be addressed and when? Because I haven't heard you talk about that. So if you could talk about that and maybe the compensation when it comes to how brokers are handling it.
Mr. Chair and Senator Benson, or Senator Jensen, I think that the first of all, I think this has been a really iterative process of sort of figuring out how we best display information, how we best sort of direct people to where they should be getting their help. And so I think any feedback that we have that will allow us to continue to refine that and make it better is good feedback, and that we will take very, very seriously. I think it's important to remember, as Chair Buettner was saying, I think the first year of this was really a lot of guesswork on how best to do this. We learned some lessons from that, tried to improve those this year. I think, again, I think this is going to be iterative, and getting the feedback that to improve that is something that we're committed to and we'll put into action. I think we demonstrated this year that we made a lot of changes based on what we learned last year, but undoubtedly we're going to learn year over year, and I think the, whatever we can find out to be able to do that would be a good thing. With regards to the compensation piece, I think one of the challenges that we've certainly heard from brokers and agents in particular is their inability to get compensated for example, public program enrollees who come through. As people come into their office and you're working with them to get them enrolled, there's no way to know on the front end if they're going to be Medicaid eligible, Minnesota Care eligible, eligible for a tax credit, or just not eligible for coverage but not without a tax credit. And so the playing field isn't real level in this area, and that's part of a larger policy, I think, discussion that needs to be had in terms of that compensation piece. We don't control that within Minsure, but I think that the question is legitimate in the sense that it does present kind of an interesting landscape of compensation.
Senator Jensen.
So if it's a broader picture, where would we go, and would you be open to it as a board and as a body to take that into consideration if someone brings that through the legislature?
Mr. Chair, sure. Senator Jensen, absolutely. It's things that we discuss as board is how can we make the system more effective, as Scott has referred to. It's an iterative process, any startup. I spend my life working with startups, and what you start out with and what you end up with are going to be two very different things. And it's very important for us to get that feedback. And as Scott said, it's not within our ambit to be able to set compensation rules across the spectrum of people using the broad term assisters, whether it's a certified application processor, whether it's a navigator, whether it's a broker. We're stuck with different rules and different compensation for each of them, and it does create some market anomalies that make it hard for people to work.
Senator Pratt, did you wish to?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and you know, I have a question, and I think we've touched on it, but just to support Senator Jensen, she's been very helpful with one of my constituents who's not only had problems getting people enrolled, but also not getting compensated for it. And it's tough when you're asking people to put in weeks of effort, and literally weeks, at no cost. But my question is around following up on the agent broker. It's my understanding that the agent broker participation is down somewhere around 75% from where it was at one point in time. And so we've talked about the limitations of the system. We've talked about compensation. What are you hearing from brokers, and why are they opting out of participation in Minshew?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, as a matter of fact, I just met with some members from the broker community yesterday, and we talked about that very issue. And part of the issue is both compensation and complexity, and they go hand in hand. It's one thing to say that a broker will make full commission for a commercial product sold through Minshew. That's great from a compensation, but it still takes them time and effort because they can't enroll somebody on Minshew the same way they'd enroll them commercial outside of Minshew. So it takes more effort for them. And then you add the complicating layer of a vast majority of people who come into their office may well qualify for a public program for which they're not allowed to get compensated at all. And some of the most effective mechanisms we've seen this open enrollment period is where part of the outreach efforts have linked navigators who know the public program side of it very well and can work with those folks with a broker in their community so that they can sort of bifurcate when somebody comes in, have those initial discussions, figure out where that consumer is likely going to be, and then get them to the right resource, whether it's a broker or a navigator, to help them complete the process.
Jensen, to follow up on Senator Pratt's.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, again, in some areas of the state, there are no navigators. So what is Minshew doing to try to enhance and encourage and get some people, because we just don't have them? So as a broker, we don't have anywhere to send them. So it's a really big issue, and I'm hoping to hear something from you on how you're trying to deal with that.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator Jensen, particular last year, there was a huge challenge, and there were large areas of the state where we lacked, where there weren't navigators available. You're right, there are still some areas where we're doing that. I think one of the lessons we learned from the first year's rollout was the need to really engage at a community level in a much very, very robust way to really figure out who at that local level can serve in a navigator capacity and to try to be as broad spread as we possibly can. We're certainly much, much better spread this year than we were last year, and the support that we're able to give is much broader this year than it was last year. I think last year it was a much more targeted. This year we really focused on ensuring that partnerships were formed between the various entities. All of that said, I think I'm going to echo another theme that I'm bringing forth, which is one of iteration and learning. And I think that as we continue to see where there are gaps, that's something that we can take into consideration as we do our next round of navigator certification and ensuring that we're reaching out to the local levels to get more folks engaged at the local level so that they can partner, quite honestly, with community-based services, with agents and brokers to ensure that we're getting that spectrum of coverage. It's not perfect yet, but I think it's a far sight better than it was last year, and I think by next year we believe it'll be even stronger.
Follow-up, Senator Jensen.
One concern I have is that the grants that were given last year really did not make it to all areas of the state. So if there's some way, or if you can direct me on where I can get that and try to get that information and figure out how we're going to get some of that grant money into all areas of the state.
Mr. Chair and Senator Jensen, I'll certainly follow up with you with regards to what the last round looked like. We welcome broad feedback on how we can make sure that this works the best. We certainly don't have all the answers here, and welcome broadly whatever feedback people have so that we can ensure that we're getting the dollars to the right places to maximize the enrollment for folks.
Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you could refresh my memory, since it's been a few years since we went through this initially, what training do navigators receive? Is it similar to what agents go through for education and continuing education?
Mr. Chair and Senator Brown, yes, there is a certification process that involves an understanding of what insurance affordability programs are available, so that would encompass both the Medicaid program, the Minnesota Care program, as well as the qualified health plan site, which would involve advanced premium tax credits. As you can well understand, there's a complicated process of the Medicaid program. Medicaid by its nature is pretty complicated, so it's a training that they go through to understand that, as well as if folks are coming in who aren't eligible for a public program, what the processes are to get them involved and getting them into an advanced premium tax credit if they're eligible for it, or if not, how they just select the plan online. They're not giving guidance necessarily on that selection, but how to do that process.
Senator Brown.
Mr. Chair, thank you. So how, who would they go to get guidance? I mean, there's several different plans available. Once they get to that point, who's there to explain to them, is my provider in network or out of network? Are my prescriptions in the formulary or not in formulary for this plan? What's the best plan if I want the broadest network? Those types of questions. Is a navigator even able to answer those questions, or are they better off to discuss that with an agent?
Mr. Chair and Senator Brown, they can go multiple places. I do think that the expertise that agents and brokers bring, particularly to questions such as that, and their knowledge of the commercial side of the world in particular, is one that we encourage people to really take advantage of. It's why we do portray or publish both the navigator side and the broker side on our website to ensure that people can do their best to match up to that assistance. It's imperfect, obviously, because folks don't always know what they're going to be eligible for. Navigators are able to assist with some of that. Certainly, we do value, though, the expertise that agents and brokers bring to the table on those particular questions.
Thank you.
Senator Jensen.
Thank you. Just one last question. I know we talked
about... Doesn't have to be your last.
Okay, good. we've talked about the broker portal. And we've heard the whole time that that was something that was going to be available to agents. And you say that you're going to continue to work on that. Can you give us a more definitive time frame on that? Because I'm afraid we're losing these businesses, and they're not going to come back to the exchange. Once they go out there on their own, we've lost them, and we've already lost 75% of the agents. So that particular area, we're really concerned. And then what I'm also hearing is that when we're not getting any kind of report from the health insurance companies we're appointed with. And then sometimes, more frequently now, we are not listed as the agent. And so they become house accounts. So are you involved in that as Minsher, or who would I go to try to figure out how to solve that problem?
Mr. Leitz.
Mr. Chair and Senator Jensen, the problem that you described that you're concerned about, I'm equally as concerned about, which is that we're losing folks that aren't going to come back through. I share that concern very strongly. One of the things that we recently worked with the board on is really a prioritization of the issues that we're going to be addressing for the 2016 open enrollment period. And we had narrowed down a list, quite honestly. We realized we could not do everything. We did recently receive some additional federal money that's going to allow us to accelerate some of the build that we're able to do, which is a good thing. And one of the things that is on that list that you can rest assured I'm going to be strongly advocating for, as my board chair undoubtedly, is that broker portal and the navigator portal, because it is it's something that should have been there. It was unfortunate that it wasn't, but we can certainly moving forward address that issue and intend to very strongly.
Okay. Second,
Senator Jetson.
And the second question agents not getting recorded for some reason as the agent of record.
Mr. Chair, Senator Jensen, I may wish to work a little bit offline with you on that particular question to get you more specifics.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Leitz. Listening to the conversation here on the agents and brokers, I certainly would highly encourage that your organization take this serious and do something to correct the issue. I get a lot of complaints from the insurance agents in my district about the length of time and the clumsiness and how hard it is to get into the system and finally get somebody enrolled, the hours of times they're spending to do that. So I hope that your commitment is in earnest today and that we can get that corrected so that we can make this thing operate much smoother. But what I'd like to talk a little about is the enrollee process, and I understand that you did have automatic enrollment this year, re-enrollment. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, for individuals who had their plan still available on the exchange, you'll recall the preferred one didn't offer this year, so there was a large group who didn't have their plan still available and didn't take active action in the first month of open enrollment. Those individuals were auto-enrolled into their current plan with the ability to still make an active choice after that point.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Day.
Was that for both the people that were receiving subsidies and the people not receiving subsidies, or just one group, or...
Mr. Chair, Senator Dames, that was for both groups.
For both. Another question, a follow-up, Mr. Chair. Another question is on some of the companies, I understand that they have a health product available along with a dental package. So that would count as one enrollment. It's my understanding that if they would choose a company that did not have dental And so they would go with one company for their health, another for dental. That counts as two enrollments. So I would just like to know what percentage of the enrollments are being dual counted.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dames, for the purposes of our reporting of enrollments, we do not count the dental enrollments as enrollments. So okay. To the extent that your question is, if they chose two different plans, do we count that twice? We really only count the medical enrollment in those numbers.
Okay. And then just another question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, it's apparent that Connecticut and Kentucky and Oregon had relatively successful launches and programs going in when they launched their programs. And I'm just wondering, have you contacted those states to find out what they've done different than what we're doing in order to make ours less disastrous in the future? Or just where are we at on that? I mean, they've done a very successful job versus what ours was. And I think to say that maybe we had a disaster is probably being is sugarcoating it a little bit. So what is being done to try to get this thing up and operating correctly?
Mr. Chair and Senator Dames, I would say that there were a wide range of experiences that states had in bringing up their exchanges. Some states had smoother rollouts. I can assure you Oregon was not one of those, however. They never actually enrolled anyone through their site and have now switched to the federal exchange. So a couple things I would say. First of all, we are in contact with all the state exchanges. One of the things that is great about the system that we have in the United States is that we can learn as states from other states when they have successes and so forth. And we've borrowed a number of concepts that have been successful in those states. One of them that we're piloting this year is really around a lead broker agency in various areas to really be a point person where we share marketing and other materials with them, and they serve as a point of contact in those geographic areas, which has been very successful. We've enrolled about 1,500 folks so far. On the technology side, what we've learned is that depending on which vendors were chosen and which build-outs states had, they had more or less success. What we're finding in some states that had initial year one good rollouts, they're having some challenges in year two that they had really anticipated. Some states, such as ours, had a really bad first-year rollout but are doing much better in the second year. And we are in constant contact. I participate in a weekly phone call with all my other exchange directors so that we can share information, learn from each other, and then apply those lessons. I think your question is very legitimate and a very good one. And rest assured, we are tapping into the expertise in other states as well.
Thank you.
If I may, Mr. Chair, Senator Dames, there's a policy question underlying some of the issues as well, in the sense of the scope with which Minsure was given direction. Minsure is the only exchange, state or federal, that's offering a basic health plan, MinnesotaCare. We've had over 100,000 people enrolled through MinnesotaCare. That adds a layer of complexity that no other state deals with. In addition, we're doing a SHOP program engaging with small businesses to make it easier for them to react to a changing market as well. And so as you deliberate and look forward to what can be done with Minsure in the future, we need to keep in mind some of the broader policy issues around MinnesotaCare and making sure that we extend care to all people throughout the income spectrum.
Thank you.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kind of following up on that, all the glitches aren't fixed. I mean, we had 7,500 people that didn't get enrolled, that either the state's having to pick up the medical bills or we're having to retroactively provide them benefits. And so it seems to me that, you know, we can talk about how it's doing better, but we're still leaving a significant number of people unserved by the system. And so I, you know, to Senator Dames, I think there is some comparison to say that we've got states that are going to the federal exchange rather because they can't figure it out, and we're still leaving people underserved. And I don't know if you can talk about how we left 7,500 people unenrolled on January 1 after they'd gone through the process.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, you're absolutely right. Not every issue has been solved, and I think that we would be the first to acknowledge that. What we've really worked on is making, I think, significant progress on improving that system. But there are ones that I think we're going to encounter from time to time. And we tried to be very clear coming into this open enrollment period that we, had really made a lot of progress on the system, but there were still going to be some bumps along the way. And I think we've encountered a few of those, although fortunately there had just been significantly fewer than there were last year, and we believe by next year there'll be even fewer still.
Senator Pratt.
You know, gentlemen, we've heard a lot of concerns here this morning, and I think we got to get beyond statements like continue to work on, share concerns, looking forward. We've had about a year and a half of operations here already, and this committee, and I'm sure others, will have even more concerns as we go forward. So we're going to get you all back in here in a couple of months and see what strides you've made at that point. So, but continue to work. I know you've been working hard, but we've got legitimate concerns expressed here this morning. And
absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you both. Any further questions of these two gentlemen? All right. Maybe you could hopefully stay for a little while in case we have to get back to you. But we have Commissioner Rothman. Did you wish to come forward? Well, welcome, Commissioner. I haven't talked to you since last night. So a little while.
Thank you, Senator, Mr. Chair. Good to be here. Mike Rothman, Commissioner of Commerce. First off, it's good to see Senators Champion and Senator Fischbach joining the committee. And as for you, as for all the committee members, I encourage you and offer to come over to the department, take a tour, and kick the tires, as we would say, and welcome. Also, Mr. Chair, my recollection was you had wanted me to come back to this committee at this time and answer some questions. I had recalled there were questions in a prior hearing. I answered those questions to the extent that we had the information. I think those were good answers, so I'm here today if there are any other questions from the committee.
Senator Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner Rothman. I've got a memo here that was from Milliman, and they were sending this memo to Preferred One when they were working on their rates. And this memo refers to, it just says in your response to Julia, please mention that the rates were lowered at additional 14.7% from the 26% decrease after the first round of objections for a total rate decrease of 37%. So I think it becomes apparent here that the Department of Commerce was encouraging this company to reduce their rates lower maybe than what they were choosing to reduce them. And I think that it's my understanding that the Commerce Commission is here to protect the constituents, the consumers, in two ways. One is that the companies aren't overcharging, but two is that they're not undercharging and putting themselves in financial peril. And so I'm quite concerned about the role that either you or the Commerce Department took in the reduction of these rates and encouraging these reductions when we have a company that's looking at, and actuarially I'm sure that this could have been projected had it been looked at, and maybe it was, but projecting spending $1.31 on every dollar they're taking in for claims. And I'm curious how this came about and how this actually happened and in a sense why you let this happen.
Mr. Chair,
Mr.
Chair, and Senator Dames, I did answer a little bit of the same question, the last time I was here, and happy to do so again with respect to the Preferred One decision. First of all, we start from a place where in Minnesota, the presentation of proposals for rates and forms is a business decision made by the company. So each of the companies decides what it is that they want to file with the department. And the process is set up that all companies go through the same process with the Department of Commerce under a rate review process, which includes on the rate side actuaries, both on the company side and on the department side. When our actuaries and staff look at the company filings, they go through them with a fine-tooth comb. They want to, in this case, Preferred One had submitted actuarial information for the rate filings initially. The department staff looked at that, and those actuarial filings had incomplete information. In fact, it was incomplete information for all of the companies that filed with the department. So on a consistent and equal basis, when each of the companies filed with the department, our actuaries put out concerns, questions, and said we need further information. Because the information that was supplied was insufficient, it was potentially inadequate, and it did not gauge the uncertainties going into the marketplace at the time. And I believe what you're – I don't know. I haven't seen the document that you're referring to. Personally, I haven't seen that document. If that's the company's actuary or a company that they were working with. So I'm assuming that the document is referring to the rates that were filed not for this year but the year before because that was during the 2014 time period. So based on that assumption, Senator Dames, all the companies went through the same review process. And in a couple of cases, the assumptions were inaccurate by the actuaries. So we put out questions, and then we go through an iterative process and ask for further information from the companies to justify the rates for which they had filed with the department. The proposed rates of the companies, for example, had to take into account the new ACA market and all the requirements. These were significant major factors of change in the marketplace at that time. Second of all, there was a major shift in the MCHA population in transition, as you know. The MCHA forecasting was difficult by some companies, including the one that you're referring to. And there was some uncertainties with respect to price competition, and the list goes on. And the department insisted that the actuarial support in the company's filings be accurate. After the company in this instance took a look at them and reviewed it, came back with a different proposal on the rates. Across the board, the department did ask companies to put their best rates forward and to work with them on their assumptions and their pricing to make sure that they that their proposal was consistent with what they were what they wanted to do. And based on a consistent understanding between our actuaries as to what they could do and what they could accomplish. And as I had indicated before, the proposals from the companies were their own. We are looking at whether or not they're within a reasonableness of pricing to determine if they are justified. And if they are, then we will approve them. And in this instance, those proposals that the company put forward were within a reasonable band of certainty to determine that they were appropriate for approval. What subsequently happened is because of a lot of the uncertainties and to P1's surprise, they took a low price approach strategy like any other business that comes in with low prices, and again to their surprise took on a large amount of enrollees. Their original projections as to the amount of enrollees they would get with the pricing that they had proposed to us was a lot less than what they got. And they received a large portion of the enrollees because of the price. And because of that and the uncertainty about how that played itself out, Preferred One found that when they looked at the situation this time, they felt that the company decided that they would, for their own business decisions, not participate in the exchange this year. I want to make it clear that the department worked this year with the company before making that decision to encourage the company and to work with the company to stay on the exchange so that they could continue to provide coverage to those to the same people, to the people who had enrolled the year before and as they renewed. And again, it was the company's decision not to do that. And we will continue to closely monitor the situation and to see what happens next year.
Senator Dames.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner Rothman, for your comments. I guess I'm surprised that considering the price differential between this company and the other companies on the exchange, that wouldn't have put up a red flag that probably was been followed a little closer. I guess I'm a little bit concerned that maybe this came about in order that we be the state that has the lowest prices, and we forgot really where our eye is on the wrong prize here. And so I'm still concerned. I understand your comments, and I fully understand what you're saying, but I still think there's an issue here when we have somebody that has that price structure in relation to other price structures, and it continues to the point to where we have a company that's in financial straits. But that'll be my comments on it.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dames, Mr. Chair and Senator Dames, I appreciate your thoughts. I would like to say, too, that even if Preferred One, going back to the year before, even if Preferred One's rates weren't what they were, with all the other companies' rates, those rates were still the lowest in the country for the other companies other than Preferred One. I think it's a point to be well taken that that part of the success of Minnesota's pricing is that all of the companies are in a very good and competitive position, and I think also as well, and that bears itself out with where we wound up this past year.
Okay, any further, Senator Pratt?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When you bring up the piece that Senator Dames talked about and raising red flags in the price differential, I can't help but think about corollary to banking and safety and soundness, making sure that you're appropriately priced for risk, that you're not undercutting the market only to see huge increases later. And that was, we had a lot of discussion around active purchaser at that time. I think Senator Dames got the Milliman letter off of your website. And so when I look at this and it says, if the responses to the objections are not deemed acceptable, we can schedule a call with one of your actuaries to seek resolution, remind them that we've had total rate decreases of 37%. And so to me, that seems to be some political pressure that we've got a low-cost provider, and why we're not seeing this type of correspondence out of other issuers.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pratt, those documents are on our website, and so too are all the other companies. And so if you take a look at all of them across the board, you will see there is a consistent dialogue, very similar, between the company's actuaries and our actuaries that were looking at the pricing and actually going back and checking the assumptions. And then if you look at what they're talking about in this instance, they're discussing whether or not the company's actuarial support for their justification for their rates was sufficient. And at the original, with the original filing, they weren't. And so that dialogue has to come to a place, and that's how it works with rate filing, is to determine and make sure that the actuarial support is there for what they're proposing to the company. There is a similarity, as you indicated, between a filing or rate filings with us, but we don't review the rates of banks. We do check the safety and soundness of both institutions or both industries, and our actuaries are looking at the price as well as in terms of their justification to determine whether or not the companies can, based on their business and the uncertainties and all that's going in there, to bear the risk that they're proposing in their rates.
Follow-up, Senator.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, Mr. Rothman, I didn't mean to suggest that you did the bank rates. I'm just correlating your role with, say, the role of the OCC when they do their safety and soundness. Is it possible, and Mr. Chair, is it appropriate to ask the commissioner and the department to share with us all of the correspondence between Preferred One and the department? Because the concern I have with this is there seems to be some some pressure. This to me doesn't read like an incomplete, unsubstantiated filing. This to me, based on the language used in the memo, seems to me to be reacting to some pressure from the department to move in one direction. And so I'd like to see all the correspondence, not just the Milliman memo that's on your site.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, I'm happy to have the department share any information that's publicly available. I believe a lot of it has been posted publicly, and if there isn't anything sufficiently provided, we're happy to provide that to you.
Senator Jensen is next.
Thank you. Commissioner, there's one topic that I've struggled with since we added the agents and brokers, and I'm back on that, but the liability issue. When I had conversations with each of the departments, I could not get, so like the Department of Human Services, Department of Commerce, could not get any clear indication. What they said was, if something should happen, it'll be handled in the courts. So I dug into it further, and the E&O contracts that an agent has to provide for a mistake, whether it's them or anyone else, it says right in there, and a lot of the contracts, that the company you work with has to be rated. And the companies that we work with in health are not rated, so there's some questions on whether even our E&O coverage would be sufficient to cover us for liability. And now we have some companies that are issuing contracts with agents and brokers that say they want a waiver of liability if something should happen, so that the insurance companies are being held not liable. So the only one that I can see, not Navigators, not anyone else, the only one that's going to be held liable in a situation where there's a mistake made is going to be an agent. Is there anything that the department can do to help in that situation?
Mr. Chair and Senator Jensen, you know, the department, I'm happy to have our staff myself take a look at the situation. I don't know if there's anything we can do to help. And I understand your question. I don't know, you know, I'd have to know more information as to what they're trying to contract to do, not to do, and who's being, you know, put on the hook and all that. And but I'm happy to take a look at the issue.
Okay.
For
thank you.
Any further questions? Senator Dames.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner Rothman. Can you tell me what the Department of Commerce is doing in the area of enforcement when it comes to Navigators? They're unlicensed, and yet it's my understanding that they are giving out advice from an insurance standpoint. So what are you doing to monitor that to make sure that they're operating within the guidelines of their certification, considering they're not licensed?
Mr. Chair and Senator Dames, I'll be happy to provide you further information. There is some guidance to agents and Navigators that has been put out there for them. So to the extent they are providing, you know, advice on coverage, are they acting more like an agent, or are they have they crossed the line, so to speak, in terms of what they're doing? We would look at it on a case-by-case basis to determine whether or not they have been acting as an unlicensed agent. And then what they can fairly comment on and what they can do as a Navigator is been spelled out, and I'm happy to share that with you.
Senator
and
Jensen,
I'll ask my staff to do that.
Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Another
thing that I'm curious about is how are you being compensated for the work that you have to do when you do have interaction with the exchange?
Mr. Rothman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Jensen, I'd have a question. By you, who do you mean? Is it the insurance agent? Is it a Navigator? Or how?
I'm talking about the work that you're doing on behalf of working with the exchange, the Department of Commerce.
Mr. Chair and Senator Jensen, there's some work that the department does that is funded, and we can spell this out and provide it to you and anybody on the committee, that the department does that is funded in several different ways. So some of it may be a general fund. Some of it may be through grants. The exchange grants that the exchange has received and for which we have agreements with the exchange in terms of what those dollars can and cannot be used for. So I'm happy to provide that information to it, and it would include staffing in the rate review area. We have consumer call center staff, our own department staff that help facilitate some of the questions that come through. It might include it, an investigative staff person. So there's different areas, mm-hmm. and they're differently funded, and we can lay that all out for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Council.
And I would like to suggest that when we started the Fraud Bureau originally, we had put in legislation that there should be a report come out annually about what activities are happening and the cost effectiveness of the program. Maybe something like that we could look at.
So, Commissioner Rothman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Jensen, we do put out a fraud report every mm-hmm. year, and I don't know if that's what you're referring to or mm-hmm. something. Yeah.
Okay, good. Senator Dames, did you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Commissioner Rothman. Just to follow up again on what I was talking about with the enforcement and stuff, you laid out what you're doing to lay out the kind of the ground rules, but you never answered my question as far as what you're doing in your area enforcement. I'd just like to hear what you're actually doing in your area enforcement.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dames, I apologize, I didn't know if you wanted specifics. To the extent we have a complaint or an ongoing investigation, I'd have to find out to determine whether or not there's a specific instance or not. But I would say that in the event that, and in all events in which we have or would receive a report of somebody acting in a capacity for which they should have been licensed, we would investigate that. We would check, and we would make sure that they were appropriately licensed to be doing what they were doing. To my knowledge, I haven't seen that come to my attention in terms of a specific instance or a case where we're doing that work. But I will ask my staff and follow up to determine if there are any specific instances. And then in terms of compliance, we have issued the directive to or issued guidance to industry, to navigators, and made sure the exchange understands that, this is the landscape and these are the expectations. And we would look to everybody to be in compliance with those.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rothman. And this is not going to be our last meeting on this issue, by the way. So, Senator Fischbach, I see you.
Mr. Chair, just as one of the new people to the committee, I'm just when the commissioner and Mr. Lights and everybody continues to offer further information, does the whole committee get it? Because I'd be interested in all of this further information.
We'll make sure that everybody gets it.
Thank you.
Again, I'll repeat for the second or third time that this is ongoing for this committee. This is very important subject matter, and we're going to try to do it right. We put it in place a couple of years ago, but we're not at the 100-yard line yet. We're probably about the 70-yard line, so there's continuing work to be done. So with that, Catherine Commit, Director of Policy and Government Affairs for the Minnesota Council of Health Plans.
She's not here now.
Oh. Well, she should be here if she signed up.
It's the place to be, Mr. Chair.
Charity Flohn from the Minnesota Prairie County Alliance. And welcome to the Minnesota Senate Commerce Committee.
Thank you. I am glad to be here today. My name is Charity Flohn. I've been the Human Services Director for Steele County Human Services for the past 4 years, and for the last 15 of that, I was also the Department Director for Waseca County Human Services. As of January 1st of this year, the Human Service Departments for Dodge, Steele, and Waseca merged into one Human Service Agency, which is called Minnesota Prairie. So I recognize it's a new name for you, but I am here representing the county perspective of MNSURE. I'm also a member of MAXA, which is our Minnesota Association of County Social Service Administrators, so I'm here on their behalf as well. I'm here today specifically because Senator Jensen had called and asked me to come and share some of the experiences that she and I have talked about in some of our community meetings related to MNsure. As you've heard in some of the previous testimonies, certainly counties are a part of this process. We have the responsibility to administer the medical assistance program under the guidance of the state. And as I understand it, and I am not a MNsure expert, but over 80% of those enrolling through MNsure have become covered through medical assistance. So the county role in that process is sizable. There are over 200,000 people, if I've got my numbers right, Scott would be able to confirm that, who are covered under medical assistance now through MNsure. So at the county level, we have seen a tremendous increase in our workload in terms of just sheer volume of increases of caseload. In our combined three counties, our caseload is roughly 5,000 people who are on health care, which includes the previous medical assistance program as well as the MNsure. And at least half of those are folks who have been covered through MNsure. We are getting a large number of new cases through this system, but part of our challenges are system-related. As we've heard previously, our ability to navigate within this new computer system is extremely limited. For instance, right now, for us to make a change, a life change in a family situation, a case, something as simple as having a newborn baby, you know, and adding that to the case. That used to be in our previous computer system, the MAC system, a matter of a few keystrokes that might take 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Now we have like a 45-minute process to simply add that newborn. And I know that there's efforts being made to kind of make that a little bit easier, but it is an extremely cumbersome process. The other thing that we can change is someone's address if they move within the county boundaries. If they move outside of the county or outside of the state, or outside of the state, then we have to contact the state to do some of that work for us. We are really very limited in some of the things that we can do. And it maybe is no surprise, but people adding babies is a fairly frequent occurrence. So this is something that comes up quite regularly. If we have someone who has other kinds of changes, you know, changes in income or job change, they move or get married or divorce, family dynamic kinds of things, we are really unable to do things. So they're calling us as we, they're instructed to kind of notify people of changes. We are unable to do much with the changes. So we are needing to continually be shifting information back and forth with the state. And while, you know, we're encouraged very much that MNsure is going to have some additional money to help work on some of the technology pieces, we are hopeful that those will come sooner rather than later as we move forward. So essentially, our workload has increased tremendously, but the speed in which we can do it has decreased because of some of those system kinds of things. We also have clients, because we are still operating in multiple systems, we have what's called the MAXIS system, MMIS, and MNsure, and clients are getting kind of bounced back and forth between the systems. You know, they call us with updates that we want to be able to make. We have to connect to the state, or they call the state sends them to the county. So there's a lot of back and forth. So we've got to have a better way of doing some of these handoffs so we can eliminate or certainly reduce the confusion that happens as people are moving back and forth. We also have interactions certainly with the navigators, the brokers, the certified application counselors at the hospitals and health plans. And again, there's lots of people that have a role in this process, but it's not always clear who can respond to the particular question and get answers for the individuals. And so there's a fair amount of it lies in their shop or it lies in their shop, and it's not necessarily moving forward as quickly and efficiently as we would like it to do. So we would like to have more clarity on what are the roles of the different players and who can do what. You know, the system improvements are needed to help us be able to provide good customer service. I think we're all very frustrated at all levels, really, that we're not able to be as effective and meeting the needs of our customers effectively. Previously, there's been some discussion, I think Senator Jensen brought this up, about the decline in the number of navigators. There are some real restrictions in greater Minnesota in terms of accessing people who can help walk through this. During the last year of enrollment, We were fortunate that we had a navigator through one of the grant-funded agencies to hold office hours in our county twice a month that would be able to take, you know, all comers. They didn't have to be public assistance clients. And that was just a real benefit. The financial workers knew when they were coming and could schedule things. The community members knew when they were coming, so we could do that. That particular agency was not funded in this the grant cycle for this year. The new agency that did receive funding, you know, we've been able to connect with them. They've come twice, but we haven't been able to get them back on the calendar again. Just today we heard that they might be able to get here either in February or March. So we've gone from a, you know, twice a month option to maybe every other month, something like that. So that becomes an issue. The number of brokers we have listed for Steele County has now dropped to 4. I think last year we were at 10 or something in that neighborhood. Our local hospital does have some certified application counselors that are very willing to help and do a great job, but they don't show up on the website, so people don't know about that unless they're calling the county or perhaps the brokers who are trying to redirect folks. So there are resources sometimes out there, but they're not all readily available to folks, and they don't know where to find them. We do need to have improved access to and timeliness of training at the county level, and I recognize certainly that lots of things have happened and changed within the state system as they've tried to make some of these improvements. But there are 2,000 state financial workers, and it's really very hard to get that many people trained in a timely manner and to free up people to get to St. Paul for the training. There certainly was some on-site training in St. Paul, which was really quite good and provided great information for the financial workers, but only a small portion of that 2,000 financial workers got there, and then it's kind of a train the trainer and bring it back, and you lose an awful lot in translation when you're going back. And some of the remote training, while, you know, provided a lot of the good information, was less effective and less comprehensive. So we have people who have got an increased workload, a lot of workarounds that we need to do, not feeling confident necessarily in the training that they've gotten. So we're certainly hoping that that would be something that we could have enhanced. In Steele County, we were actually on a wait list to get into the training. Once those training spots opened up, they were filled immediately if you weren't in that first batch. You know, so we didn't get training until into December and should have had it ideally back in September. And certainly there are a lot of efforts that have been going on to help improve the system and enhance communication, but we do continue to struggle at the local level. With the incredibly large role that the counties play in this process, both MACSA, the County Social Service Administrative Group, and AMC have adopted positions requesting to have a county representative on the MNCHR board. We certainly feel we need to have a role or an active part in the discussion if, you know, the large percentage of folks covered through MNCHR are public assistance folks. We need to be, you know, at the table having a part of that discussion. You know, despite, you know, the challenges that we've got, the MA coverage for our clients has increased significantly. We see that as a very good thing. We've had a rocky start, but we do acknowledge things are getting better. We just want to see that continue on that curve. And we want to be able to partner with the state to work on the fixes that will have the greatest impact on the work that we do and the clients that we serve. So that would be my testimony, and welcome questions.
Very good, Ms. Flo. We appreciate that because you're right on the front line and all this stuff, and you get it firsthand, I would think. And,
yes.
And CEO and chair and Mr. Rothman and others were listening to what you had to say. So, again, thank you again for coming to the Minnesota Senate. Heidi Michaels. An insurance agent? Is it the Deisty?
I think Alicia's
coming up there too.
Alicia Rydell.
And Alicia Rydell, are you coming up front too? Okay, welcome.
Thank you.
To the Commerce Committee. You may proceed. Identify yourself for the tape.
Mr. Chair, committee members, good afternoon. My name is Heidi Michaels. I am an independent insurance agent working for a local agency in the Twin Cities. We are here today representing the Agents Coalition, which includes the 4 professional agent associations in Minnesota. That's the Minnesota Association of Health Underwriters, the National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors, the Professional Insurance Agents, and the Independent Insurance Agents. Collectively, we represent over 54,000 licensed insurance agents in Minnesota and their employees. As such, we work on a daily basis representing both group and individual market consumers on a daily basis.
I'm Alicia Riedel. I am an insurance agent that works for Willis of Minnesota, and I'm also the immediate past president of the Minnesota Association of Health Underwriters.
Agents continue to be disappointed with the ongoing problems of MNsure. Specifically, there are functionality problems that hamper agents' efforts to guide our clients through the process of signing up for qualified health plans. Just to comment on some of the earlier testimony and to clarify, it's not a poorly functioning agent portal. It's a non-existent agent portal. There isn't one. So when we are helping clients, we are doing so blindly. The only way that we know a client's status is by having the client sign in to their own MNsure ID and report to us what their status is. This problem alone is causing many of the consumers to get frustrated and walking away from MNsure in many cases. We recommend that you require MNsure to create the broker portal before the next open enrollment season. We have been promised a broker portal since 2010, but to date there's been no constructive process on it. Many agents have dropped their MNsure certification, with about 75% fewer agents getting certified this year compared to last year. Since they cannot afford the time-consuming process that is required without the agent portal, many have made the economic decision that they just can't afford to spend the time working on MNsure. Agents also do not know if they will be compensated for their time. Many agents are not aware that the field to enter the agent number is not an active field to track the agent's business. So on every application, they're required to submit an agent of record letter signed by their client in order to get compensated. It's important to remember that agents don't get paid if they don't sell a policy. One of the other pieces that we're working on is what we call right to advice, where consumers are given the opportunity to select an agent, and not only initially when the policy is sold, but to choose the agent that they want to work with going forward to service their policy. Right now, there are no requirements for the insurance carriers to accept a request to change agents from consumers. We also recommend that the premium rates for the qualified health plans, both inside and outside of MNsure, be approved and disclosed no later than 60 days before open enrollment. Agents and consumers need time to prepare and give time for making decisions, especially because next year's open enrollment is scheduled to be much shorter than this year's. This year was 4 months, and next year's 2.5 months. With that, I'll turn it over to Alicia.
Thank you. Welcome. So we would also like to say that we heard a number of people talking about the ability for agents and brokers to get compensated for helping those that are eligible for public programs. We are unsure of how that could work from a legislative perspective or on the carrier side, but we support exploring that possibility. We've talked extensively, even met with MNsure yesterday to talk about the fact that, you know, we're hearing anecdotally that 70-80% of the people that agents are fielding questions from end up being eligible for public programs. And the nature of agents is to help, so often they are actually doing that work. And someone mentioned earlier that who actually can recommend a plan to an enrollee, and at the end of the day, the agent is one who's trained to be able to make an actual recommendation, not just assist in enrollment. And so many of these people are confused and not sure what plan to choose, and at the end of the day, these brokers and agents are helping them, even though there's no way for them to track what's happening with those clients because they're not the agent of record, and there's no way for them to get compensated on an ongoing basis. We also would like to recommend that enrollment in the basic health plan, the BHP, not be required for applicants who are eligible. The state of Minnesota, as you noted earlier, is the only state that has the basic health plan, and we believe that instead of allowing individuals in the affected income range to only enroll in Minnesota Care, that they get the choice between enrolling in the basic health plan and purchasing a commercial policy with tax credits like the rest of the consumers in the country get that option, or they have the ability to collect tax credits and buy a commercial policy. There is very little actuarial difference in the value of these plans, and once you take into consideration the advanced premium tax credits and cost-sharing reductions, especially after the governor's recommended premium and cost-sharing increases take effect. In addition, many Minnesota Care participants are limited in their provider networks, as many physicians restrict their participation in public programs, and many families prefer to all be covered on the same family plan rather than have to split up their coverage. Often these families, the parents would be on a commercial policy and the children would be on a public assistance policy, and that causes a lot of issues for families, and they would prefer to have all the same policies. We would also recommend that SHOP or small group, well, we would like to say that it's clearly not working and has little enrollment. And we recommend that Minnesota seek a waiver to decouple the small employer tax credit with enrollment in SHOP. Prior to 2014, eligible small employers could buy any group plan and were not forced to purchase from a non-functional exchange to obtain their tax credit. We are the ones who actually bring clients to Minsure. Every business knows that their sales force is the critical link to growth. Yet we do not feel that our voice is heard. The attitude seems to be that they think that there's an overwhelming thought that the job can get done without agents. And I think as we've seen over the last 6 months to a year, that sentiment is starting to change, that consumers, whether they're an employer or an individual, really do trust their agent and broker. And we need to have a voice. We recommend that you require Minsure to be overseen and accountable to the legislature, including, for example, requiring legislative approval for Minsure's budget. And we also note that the board struggles as a whole since they lack any member with substantial health insurance experience or expertise. We recommend that you modify the board representation and the process for appointing members to the Minsure board. Add industry experts and additional business representatives to serve on the board, especially small employer representation, as they are the most affected by Minsure. Repeal existing conflict language and adopt the federal conflict of interest standard. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Reinhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess want to touch for a moment on that last point. Folks that were members of this committee when we addressed this 2 years ago, we had a lot of conversation on that point. And some of us, myself included, felt that insurance agents were an important stakeholder in this whole puzzle. And I know I heard that clearly from, I'm in Duluth, from my local agents who, many of them had never talked to me about anything else, but that, you know, this mattered, this point of people are comfortable coming to us, they're familiar with coming to us, we want to be able to do this. You know, so to me that was a stakeholder group that ought to have been represented from the get-go on the oversight board, and, you know, and there was concerns about that, and there, you know, and there was pushback on that. So, you know, one of my contributions to all of that was the advisory board that did get included. But, Mr. Chairman, it seems clear to me at this point that the advisory board is not working. Much of what we've spent time talking about today is all related to insurance agent issues. And if the advisory board function were working, we would not be having that conversation. So, you know, I know, Mr. Chair, you have some thought about how we're going to move forward on this, and I would hope that we would address that issue. And for my part, I would like to see just what you mentioned, insurance, especially small, independent, greater Minnesota insurance represented on that board. Because what I hear you saying is we want to be a part of this, we want to make this work, but it's just there's a disconnect now, and I think that is something the legislature can and should address moving forward.
Yeah, Senator Reinhart, I'm aware of about three or four bills that might be wanting to change the makeup of the board, so we'll see how that flows and how it goes, but we're gonna hear those bills here too.
Thank you.
Well, we've got, I think, some good interaction here with the senators and the people that are out in the real world working on this stuff, and it's all going to be considered. So thank you for your input. And any further discussion today? Again, we're going to be back on this issue going forward, but this is, I thought, pretty good informational get-together here. So thank everybody for attending. And with that, meeting's adjourned.
All right.